Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
A very good evening to you. I'm John Moss, and our in-depth coverage of every candidate in the 2016 general election has two forms in the main: the shorter, four-minute, sharper exchanges on the Mandate programme in the morning, are designed to put a candidate under a little bit of pressure to judge their mettle. But at other times, we come from the hurly-burly of the four-minuter to the deep, deep peace of the more leisurely discussion over 25 minutes, and this evening's a case in point. That's what we'll be enjoying with the present Home Affairs Minister, who is offering himself once more to the public in Russian, where in the past he just topped 3,000 votes on one occasion. Joan Watson, good evening to you. Thanks
evening, John.
For joining us. A slimmer Russian this time after the boundary adjustment. In the last 5 years, of course, all its three MHKs were ministers. Mr. Watterson was 26 when he was first elected 10 years ago, 36 now, of course, married with a family, indeed with a child who has still to reach 6 months. One can understand why his Twitter account charts a series of excursions away from the house to knock on doors, probably for a bit of peace and quiet. He puts his interests family and armed forces. Sometimes a knowledge of the latter can help with boisterous teenagers, but that's a stage you've yet to reach. In 2011, 3,000 people put their trust in you. Have you justified that trust, Minister?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that I dedicated a lot of my life to working for the people of Russian, and it's great to go out knocking on doors. I'm almost halfway round the constituency now, and the feedback I'm getting on the doorstep is that trust has been well placed. So I'm very grateful to the people of Russian for that opportunity over the last 10 years, and I'd like to think that I've done as well as I can for them.
Yes, looking at your Twitter account, you've given a sort of geographical survey of where you've been. You were at Serby yesterday in the sunshine. What have people been talking about on the doorstep?
I think there's a wide range of issues. Obviously, the big international issues are Brexit, it's public sector pensions, at a more local area, more local issues are the state of the roads around the Isle of Man, and what people see as wasting money in different schemes. So there's been quite a big range of issues that people have been talking to me about on the doorstep.
You've been there for 10 years. Do people say to you, you said you'd do this 10 years ago and you haven't done it, why not?
Well, on the whole, I think people haven't got an awful lot to criticise me for on that. I've certainly been vocal in my support where I've said I'll try and achieve things. Of course, politics on the Isle of Man is the art of the possible, and that's the nature of having a system full of independence.
You have to persuade the people, though, that is what it's all about.
I think most of the people are very savvy about that. They realise how politics works on the Isle of Man. They send you in as the person with the right ideas, the right skill set to deal with the challenges that come barrelling down against the island's politicians, and trust you to do the right thing for them.
In 2011, looking at your manifesto then, you said you opposed what you considered to be grandiose, unnecessary and ill-thought-through schemes, Queen's Pier, Richmond Hill and the Ballykillowy roundabout. Isn't this attacking the events, items that prove controversial, basically saying, you know, I had nothing to do with them to build up your popularity? You could have included the Slock, incidentally, in that as well, but it wasn't.
That was 5 years.
That wasn't done in 2011, yeah.
No, that was 5 years ago, and I think there's still a lesson to be learned by government about grandiose schemes sometimes. Certainly in my department, in Home Affairs, we have stuck to the basics. We've got a huge amount of money out of the budget, still achieving great services thanks to fantastic teams in police, fire, prison, civil defence and other areas of the department, and not spending huge amounts of money and not raising charges to do it. And I think that's reflective of that sort of just getting your head down, getting the job done, and that's really what's marked my last 5 years in the Department of Home Affairs.
What have you got against the Queen's Pier? Because it's obviously enormously popular in Ramsey to get something done about it.
It is, and I was at the show and I've given money to help the community project.
But you described it as grandiose, unnecessary and ill thought through.
Yeah, I don't think that it's a priority of government.
So it shouldn't happen?
It's not a...
It should, well, let it float away.
Well, I think if there's a community group that's there to... that's happy to pursue fixing and mending, I'm happy to contribute to that as a Manx citizen, but I certainly don't think it's a priority for government's funds when we're still shy of a balanced budget.
Very half-hearted support for Ramsey, for the pier there, then.
It's not a priority for the Isle of Man, John.
The social attitude survey. Now, I know you hadn't had a chance to look at this because it's only just come in, but I've been looking at it. I've had a chance to look at it because I think I have more time than you have at the moment. It says that 75% of those who responded, this is 2,122, they were hoping for at least 500. They got four times that amount, thought the Isle of Man government didn't have clear objectives. Now, this is all to do with communications and presumably includes your department, or do you think it's just generally aimed at the whole government?
I think it would be generally aimed at the whole government, and I think whilst people might think of policies and things on a detailed level, I think if you talk to people about balancing the budget, protecting the vulnerable and growing the economy, I think most people know that they are the priorities of government.
Just looking at the whole government, currently we have a position which is going vacant. The Chief Minister is stepping down, obviously. Are you Chief Minister material? Do you want to be a Chief Minister?
I don't particularly...
You had 10 years of a virtually unblemished record.
Yeah, I don't necessarily aspire to be Chief Minister. It's not what I went into politics for. I don't anticipate my name being in the first round ballot for that. If there's a situation whereby Tynwald want me, I wouldn't turn it down, but I won't be getting my elbows out and looking for the job.
A period ago, Alan Bell, I think, was out of the picture for a while for one reason and another. Mm-hmm. And we understand that looking at another form of administration was considered by certain members. Were you one of those members?
Yeah, I think talking about a slightly misreported events through the Isle of Man newspapers where a few of us ministers sat down and thought, what if Alan doesn't come back? What happens then? I mean, he'd been off for over a month. And needless to say, you have to start thinking about what if.
Succession planning was what this was about.
Yeah. And it was nothing more than that. So it, needless to say, that then got spun to the newspapers as a conspiracy theory. And I've since had a written apology from the member who leaked that.
Can we ask you whose name was came out the hat as a possible Chief Minister, or whose names?
I don't know. We're still waiting to see who's going to come out. I'm a great believer that if you want to stand for Chief Minister, you should come and tell the public first, and that's why I'm not part of that.
Before the election,
yes,
you should let people know.
Yeah,
but historically in the island, people are frightened to do that because they think they'll suffer at the polls if they do that.
Yeah, well, I think that's... not a great excuse for doing it. I think it's important that the public know. And obviously the submission I gave to Lord Lisvain about how we could change our way of doing elections for Legislative Council would give you a way where the public could have a say on Chief Minister. The idea being that you could have two ballot papers and you could rank all the island's candidates in order if you wanted to, so that you could both choose a Legislative Council on a secondary mandate and you would give a clear idea to Tynwald as to who the public choice for Chief Minister would be. But it would only be advisory for Tynwald.
You also suggest, on the same subject, that there should be more public involvement in the debate in choosing the Chief Minister. What form would that take?
I'd like to see public hustings for it. I'd like to see...
gosh, this would take a long time. I mean, you need
debate.
A Chief Minister fairly quickly after an election, don't you?
This could all be done within the week period between being sworn in and the vote in Tynwald. We're talking about, you know, maybe 3 or 4 meetings around the Isle of Man where the public can come and ask the candidates questions. So it needn't be any more involved than that. But I still think that's a great opportunity for public engagement.
So candidates put forward and the public have a chance to quiz them and talk to them. And then at the end of the day, who would vote for the Chief Minister?
Well, it would be the House of Keys that would ultimately have the final
Not
say.
Not Tynwald, the House of Keys.
Well, whilst I'm a big believer that the Chief Minister has to have the confidence of all of Tynwald. Whoever's going to hire him needs to have the power to fire them as well, whether that's the House of Keys or Tynwald.
Let's have a look at your department, Home Affairs. You have, you say, reduced costs by 25%. Where in Home Affairs has a quarter of the costs been cut?
Well, we've...
You've moved, for one thing.
We've downsized, as anyone would do if they're looking to save money. We saved a huge amount on our estates, and we've sold property, we've come out of rental as well, and we've cut staff, and certainly the chief executive, the minister's office in Home Affairs has gone down from 27 to 9. So we've focused on core tasks rather than the optional extras. And unlike other departments, we haven't increased fees and charges. We have actually cut costs. And I think that's to the credit of the people who work at the Department of Home Affairs.
Surely with dropping 25%, some services have suffered.
Well, I'll let the record speak for itself.
You say no services have suffered.
Let's look at the figures. I mean, we've still got all of our retained fire stations with retained firefighters in them. We have still got a very safe island. We've got crime figures that are down at the levels not seen since 1970, a high detection rate, a very high public satisfaction rate, a police service that has got investors in people champion status, a prison that operates very well and is doing more than ever in terms of restorative justice and community sentence options. These are not the sort of things that come out of a failing department. These are real successes because I have great staff who are thinking innovatively about alternative ways of dealing with problems with less money.
Just talking about cutting costs as well, one area in recent weeks there's been criticism has been the prosecution of people found with small amounts of a class, I think it's class B, is it, cannabis drugs. In one case, one amount that was barely measurable. It's an area perhaps where a lighter hand might save cash, mightn't it?
It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, obviously we can't send a message out that it's okay to commit crime. Equally, the sentences have to be proportionate. And obviously the Department of Home Affairs only has a certain role in this piece. It can't actually sort of go out and change sentencing. But we're in terms of the law, normally...
But Tinwell can.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But in terms of the actual giving the sentences, that's down to the judiciary, making sure that is...
But you're a politician and this would be a political decision.
Yeah, so what we've said is that... Well, let's just wind back a bit here. Normally, for a first offence for a drugs issue, the first answer is not to go to court. Normally, for first offence, you would get a... For a small amount, it would be a police caution, and it could be then community service. So really, the people who are coming into court for small amounts are often being charged with other things as well, or they've been so far down the road that there really is no other option or no other disposal route for them in terms of other sentences to give. It's because it's escalated to that point.
The parole system's been looked at, obviously, yeah. An inquiry into that after an incident. Is that going to come out as a more efficient, more modern system in the Isle of Man? Because it did lag behind, didn't it? It was lagging in some areas.
Yeah, I think that there is scope to change the parole system. I really look forward to the recommendations of Mr. Caron when his report comes out. And it's a shame that it hasn't come out sooner.
It's Lord Lisvain has set rather a benchmark, hasn't he? The speed of his report and his findings really has people saying, well, why aren't all reports out that quickly?
One might argue that the quality is reflected in the speed with that report.
Really? You're not a fan of Lord Lisvain's fan?
Not a great fan, no. I think that there were alternative imaginative solutions to some of the problems that we face, and I think he's imported his agenda that he had whilst in Westminster politics to the Isle of Man. I don't think that a lot of the solutions that he's excited about are particularly appropriate for the Isle of Man.
It could be claimed that it's blue skies thinking, that he's bringing in a different approach that's worth looking at.
Absolutely. Certainly... It's great to put all the options on the table, but it doesn't mean you take everything.
A drop in crime. Obviously, we've heard the Chief Constable, Gary Roberts, say cutting down of the police, etc., slimming, as has happened in all departments, would mean pressures would be put on various places. And yet, the crime drops. How is that happening?
I think it's a mixture of things. I think it's, firstly, a reflection of the people that we have in our society. It's a function of low unemployment. It's a function of strong community values that we have on the Isle of Man, but it's also a testament to the great work that a lot of the police officers do in the neighbourhoods, getting to know people, building relationships, working with other professionals and individuals, with schools, with older people's homes, and really sort of doing that engagement piece, which drives down not just crime itself, but also the fear of crime.
This is with less officers?
Yeah.
Road standards have dropped. I think we're all aware of that. We can all feel that under our tyres. So what do we do? I mean, it's legendary that we need £100 million. Well, it was £100 million about 10 years ago. I don't know what it is now, to put the roads back in the sort of shape that we enjoy, say, at the Slock, which is a wonderfully smooth surface. I mean, what do we do about it? Do we just say we can't afford it, or do we find the money from somewhere?
I think we stick to the basics. We get out there and we resurface the roads instead of coming up with quite such grandiose plans, imaginatively shaped roundabouts and... planning fees for the promenade, which perhaps wouldn't be necessary.
The Slock's very nice. You can cycle up and down it and it feels very nice. But what do you suggest? A public poll to say which roads do you think need looking at?
No, I mean, most of the work's done. There's, I think it's the reflectograph survey that goes over the road. It tells you whether it's a foundation issue, whether it's just a surface issue. If you were to just deal with these on a priority basis and just stick to the basics, I think we'd get a lot more bang for our buck.
Well, I can see one road that needs repairing out of my window down there on the promenade. £20 million. Is it worth it? Do we need to do it?
My view would have been that with the promenade, you would just put it back, lift it up, deal with the foundations and put it back in the same layout as it is now. I don't think that needed planning permission because there's permitted development controls for the highways. And you could have just got on with it. We could have been halfway there by now.
Talking about experience in this next house, I mean, whatever happens, we're going to have less experience than we did in the last house. What about this idea of using retired members like Alan Bell, who's actually said he would be willing to do this, as a sort of think tank to advise and help new members, the new House, find its feet. How do you feel about that?
Well, with new members, it's a threat and an opportunity, isn't it? I mean, the great thing is that you'll have new ideas coming in. There's a new way of doing things. I think we're probably going to get a few more Generation Ys in as opposed to Generation Xs and a whole new different way of thinking. And that's a real positive. There is an awful lot of corporate memory going out through the door, and that is a worry. You're not going to replicate that, but it's important that politicians are their own people, and whilst they need to call on their wide variety of contacts in order to make sure that they're doing this as best they can, and I wouldn't want to discourage that, it is important that politicians, say, set their own agenda.
Is there a danger they'll learn by their own mistakes? And that, unfortunately, includes the whole population of the Isle of Man in that.
Well, that's what happens with a loss of corporate memory. But it's great that people like Alan and Eddie have offered to be available to at least explain the history of some things, even though it'll be up to the new generation of politicians to make those decisions.
You're going to wince at this next one. The incident on the bus coming 24 hours after you appealed for people to show restraint in their festive drinking must still embarrass you. Does it still damage your credibility, do you think?
That's up to individuals to decide. Obviously, it's not my proudest moment. It's something that I have regretted. And it's something that I've learned from and moved forward from.
It's a problem in this island that something like that doesn't leave you. It stays with you. It's the nature of the Isle of Man, isn't it?
Yes.
As many politicians have found. Brexit is all around us, yet no way forward for the island is yet apparent. Do you feel that we are actually working towards a suitable, or are we just leaving it on the back burner at the moment and waiting for the next administration? Should we be acting now?
Oh, absolutely not. Unfortunately, it's a case of who can be acting now and who's really got a mandate to act now. But certainly, as soon as the general election's over, it will be a case of those people who get in, who's sitting around the council minister's table, to make sure that we use those contacts, both formal and informal, built up over a lot of years, to make sure that we get the best deal for the Isle of Man and to make sure that we test the official line by that broader network of contacts that we've built up.
You say after the election is over, but, I mean, shouldn't we be acting now? Aren't there civil servants who know the situation? Aren't there people like Alan Bell who know the situation who could start doing something now?
I mean, Chief Minister's still been attending things at the British-Irish Council to make sure that our voice is heard, and we have an awful lot in common with our colleagues in Northern Ireland, in Wales, in Scotland and the Channel Islands. So there is a useful mechanism. I don't think that Brexit is going to be a subject that goes away quickly. It is going to be something that is going to dominate the international agenda over the next 2 to 5 years and possibly longer. So I don't think there's an urgency. This is definitely something that is important, but not necessarily urgent. And as I say, it's going to be a matter of, hopefully, if I get back in, people with those contacts in Westminster, in the other devolved assemblies and the other Crown dependencies, to work together to ensure that we get the best deal for the Isle of Man.
Is Brexit an opportunity or a threat for the island?
It's both. It's great to see that some people in the business community are looking at the opportunities that are coming out of that. Obviously, the unknown is always a threat as well.
But could we lose out? Businesses leave because they think it's a bit of an uncertain future?
I don't think so. And this is why I say I don't think Brexit is something that is going to happen quickly. It's something that is going to unfold over time, and it's something that we need to help shape as it goes forward. The worst possible situation would be that we take our eye off the ball and become used as a bargaining chip by the UK. Now, due to the good level of official contacts with the Isle of Man, I don't think that is going to happen, but it will be a case of making sure that the pressure is kept on the British government to best represent our interests and remind them what that is.
From what you've seen, do you think Theresa May is more for... Well, she seems to be fairly... We've heard about this business about going for people who are advising people on how to save money, etc., in tax matters. It seems she's cracking down on the offshores. Is she more of a threat to us than David Cameron was?
No, I don't necessarily see it like that. There's a great article recently in the Economist about how there is still this sort of perception that offshore equals badly regulated, and that isn't the case. Obviously, we would be quite proud and hold ourselves up to the OECD, to Moneyval, and to show just how high the standards are that we operate to compared to those that aren't subject to that sort of inspection, such as the US and such as Ireland.
Let's have a look at local issues in Russia. Well, Russian's much slimmer, of course, now. Mm-hmm. Do you regret that? Have you lost a lot of solid constituents over the border?
I do regret that. I think that
larger
constituencies mean fewer parochial politicians. And so the losing Colby and Ballabeg and the areas around that are a bit of a loss. I would have preferred to see bigger constituencies rather than smaller ones. 700 fewer houses to go around might be the only good news that that comes out of it. But I do think that people from Colby were far more Port Erin looking, and people from Ballabeg were far more Castletown looking. But I do think that we've missed a trick there in terms of keeping communities together and which way that they identify. And that's just lines on a map now.
Well, talking of communities together, you've got two ports, obviously, mm-hmm. who seem to be inexorably growing closer and closer physically. Should someone say, OK, let's join them together?
Well, obviously, I have a slightly vested interest in this, and that my house is in the middle of them, and then I look out over the green area at the back. But there are still two clear and distinct identities.
And should remain too clear, you think?
Well, yeah, I do. I think there's still people definitely clearly identify between Port Erin and Port St Mary. However, that's not to say that going forward they couldn't work together far more. There couldn't be a shared administration. There could be fewer commissioners in both ports. And they are moves that I would support.
But there's no moves at the moment to do that. Because obviously Garth has come together and it seems to be working well. Other places did the same?
I think it's a great model to look at in terms of making sure that the local authority members are working together and are looking at efficiencies as well as national government in terms of working across boundaries, whether those be local authority boundaries or in terms of functions and delivery of services, to make sure that they're giving the best service to their constituents as well.
On a national scale, with banking diminishing and the number of banks is going down, you note the impressive rise in the economy of e-gaming. Mm-hmm. The moral aspect of gaming, are you comfortable with that?
Yes. I have no problem at all with e-gaming. I think that we have other support structures such as Gamble Aware, and it's also interesting to note that...
But we are encouraging gaming, are we not? I know it's said we're not actually the instigator of gaming, we're a facilitator of companies to do it, but are we not encouraging the industry?
Well, so you look at Gamble Aware as one part, but also we're feeding this into very different cultures as well. Most of the Isle of Man's e-gaming market is not UK or EU driven. It's out to the Far East, where there's a very different culture and very different way of looking at that. But I certainly have no problem with it, and the fact that it's providing so many jobs and well-paid jobs in the Isle of Man is a real bonus as well, and it has offset some of the downsizing in banking. And of course it's also providing a cluster effect, so you're getting people on the Isle of Man now with great IT skills, great marketing skills, great development skills, and that's having other spin-offs. The Isle of Man's future has got to be in that human capital, in bringing together creative people with new ideas, and making sure that they can build on a good infrastructure and build those small companies, small businesses into bigger businesses in the creative arts fields.
Well, we're approaching the end, and speaking of infrastructure, can I just mention sea services? The steam packet, you say that the government, there shouldn't be nationalisation. What, even a partial buy-in, say a shareholding by the government to give it more say?
I might not rule out a buy-in, but I would hate to see the Isle of Man government running sea services directly. I think that would be an absolute last resort.
And just in the last minute, planning. Russian's very popular with people, lovely place to live, etc. Is there enough housing? Is there too much housing? If not, where should it be?
At the moment, I'd say there's a slight excess of housing. I don't believe that all the houses that have been in the new Ballachilly development have sold yet, so still an opportunity to come and live in this fantastic part of the world and register to vote before the 1st of September. It's important that the Isle of Man retains its sense of rural identity, and we've got to be very careful how we manage planning in that regard. It's something that I've been involved with certainly all my time in the House of Keys. It's one of the most sensitive matters that we deal with, about how you grow jobs, you provide places for young people to live, and strike that balance. It's really difficult.
Nice part of the world to live, though, isn't it? Russian?
Fantastic part of the world. I would say the best.
Well, that's brought us to the end of this discussion. Duan Watson, standing again in the constituency of Rushen, after being a minister for 5 years and indeed being in the seat for 10 years, the youngest MHK was when he was elected in 2006 at the age of 26. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. I'm John Moss. Good evening.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.